Everybody, welcome to What the Tech. I'm Andrew Zarin. Of course, I'm joined by Mr. Oh, geez, I shouldn't have done that. Paul Theroux. How you doing, Paul?
geez.
That's what you did last week. when you apparently put your laptop to sleep or turned it off.
You know what? Speaking of which, I just reconfigured this thing. And I need to reconfigure it again.
What happened? It broke again?
No, we got pre-release versions of, the Surface devices. And, a lot of people who reviewed them have various issues. And Microsoft sent out a new image for both devices, or new images. And I wasn't going to put it on there because mine's been, the newer one is kind of like a production unit, I think. And I wasn't really having any problems. And last night I had a couple hours and I was like, you know what? I'm going to wipe this thing out. I'm going to put the Microsoft image on it. I'm going to reapply all my data and all that stuff, install apps. And I just did it. So, but there's a couple of things, you always forget a couple of things.
Yeah, so I was going to ask you that. Is it a production unit, which you have?
This one is. The first one wasn't. They sent me a new one.
Any differences in the two?
Well, I mean, the second one was an upgrade in the sense that it has an i7 and the discrete GPU. But, the first one had all these pre-production stickers all over it and everything. It was kind of buggy. So this one has been a lot more stable.
Oh, that's interesting. Your weekend now, over a weekend now, right? 2 weeks that you have the device?
I have a hard time remembering. I mean, let me look. what was the other thing? You sync with OneDrive. I swear to God, OneDrive sat there for 3 to 4 hours processing changes before it synced anything. I wanted to murder it. It finally did. I was thinking to myself, I'm going to go to Vegas and this thing's not going to be synced up. Actually, I don't have a way of saying it. So I don't remember. I'm sorry. I got the i5 version was on the 7th, I want to say. So I'm probably closing in on 2 weeks with the i7 version.
That's not bad. So about you've had
days.
It for a while.
Now,
you're actually traveling. You're going to Vegas tonight.
Yep.
Is the Surface going to be the only laptop that you bring? Okay, so this is going to be a good test to see durability. Battery life.
I was thinking, I'll bring the USB key with me on the trip, and if I have some downtime, I'll wipe it out there. Then I was like, wait, no. that's stupid. That's even for me, that's stupid.
So, do we have a lot to talk about today?
Not my Vegas trip.
Well, we do have to talk about your Vegas. Well, what are you doing in Vegas, actually? Let's talk about that for a second.
I'm going to a trade show called Dev Intersections, which is like Dev and IT Intersections. It is some friends of mine who, are starting this thing up. They're trying to get an IT track going. Mary Jo's going to be there. Brad's coming to Vegas, but not for the show. We'll see him out there as well. And George and all those guys. So I'm just going to be, we were going to do a Live Windows Weekly, but we had an AV issue cropped up, but now we can't do that. And
do you want me to get you a studio over there too? I can set it up.
Oh, maybe. I don't know. Well, I don't know. But we're going to, Mary Jo is speaking, I believe, and I'm just going to be part of a panel, like a Q&A type thing.
So I ask you this a lot, but I want to talk to you because I'm doing a panel on Saturday at AES, which is the Audio Engineering Society conference that they have.
Okay.
And I'm going to be talking about implementing Skype in your broadcast, in your professional environment. Do you get nervous for these things? Because I know you do more of these speaking engagements than I do. I talk for a living, but when I'm in front of anybody,
it's a different thing.
It's a very different thing, and I actually I sound like an idiot more than usual. I actually get very nervous, and it's almost like I got to take something beforehand to kind of settle my nerves before I go up and I talk. Even if I'm on a panel or I'm doing a thing on my own, it's still the same. It's nerve wracking for me.
Right. I can get nervous appearing in front of people. It depends on the situation. It depends on how long it's been. I remember, this isn't that recently, I guess, a couple of years ago, 3-4 years ago, I was sitting in the audience talking to some people I work with, and I was about to go on stage, and they were saying, wow, this must really make you nervous doing this, And I was like, no, not really. I do a lot of this kind of stuff, and, blah, blah. And, one of the women was like, oh, I'd never be able to do this, yada, yada, yada. And I was like, yeah, no, it's really not that bad. And then it was like, okay, Paul, you got to go up. And then I stood up and I was like, oh crap, I'm really scared now. And it was almost like she psyched me out. So I don't know. I've spoken at some incredible places. I spoke in the Hague at a beautiful place at the Chicago Field Museum at a beautiful building. I've spoken on the Microsoft campus, in various Microsoft facilities, around the country. Spoke in Germany one time. you know, I don't know. I do smaller user group things. I like those because smaller groups and it's kind of more informal, kind of more like what we're doing and just talking. People feel free to interrupt and ask questions and, you know, the conversation kind of goes.
But I kind of prefer that. I kind of prefer people like talking with people rather than talking to people. Like I don't want people to interrupt and ask questions.
Now, the one thing I'll say for you, what you're doing and you know, what I'll be doing in Vegas is that a panel is a very different thing than getting up and reading off a PowerPoint, right? And the one thing I'm not good at, which is a nice way of saying I'm not good as a public speaker, is just speaking off a script. You know, and there are guys who do this for a living who are really good at it.
Phenomenal,
you know, Mark Massey, Mark Rosinovich, a lot of people like that. They're fan, you know, Scott Hanselman, just guys who are professionals and they're awesome at it. And what they do is very similar to what a comedian does, like a stand-up comedian, right? You really have to know the talk, you know? These are guys who are also very knowledgeable about what they're talking about, right? So I don't mean to say they can't speak off the cuff, but I think because they can about the topic they're talking about. Of course, they're very smart people and they're experts in their fields. You know, they can answer questions and know what they're talking about. But I don't. To me, most of the things I talk about, especially these days, you know, for the past 10 years, has been like kind of a one-off thing. So it doesn't make sense for me to be perfect at memorizing the talk and being able to speak to the talk.
So do you feel that you get practice by doing the podcast? Because, you know, you're kind of talking about similar subjects sometimes. So is it like you could actually gauge what works and what doesn't based on what you've said in the past on the podcast?
It's almost the opposite, right? So I think the reason the podcast stuff works for me is because in this case with you and with Leo as well on Windows Weekly, it is, and you know, Mary Jo now, of course, it's a conversation, right? Yeah. It's not... And in fact, the things I don't like, and this will happen to me more, this happens actually in both podcasts, you know, I will talk and talk and talk and talk because I can certainly talk and I love the sound of my voice. And then I realize no one else is talking and I kind of stop and it's like, hello, you know, you're almost speaking into like a vacuum. And I don't like to dictate, you know, information. I'd rather have it be a back and forth. And for that reason, you know, for what you're doing, like in a panel, the opportunity to have a back and forth and to go back and forth, I think is the stuff I like and it's what I'm comfortable doing. Years ago when I used to do road shows and you travel around the country and I would give the same talk, you know, in every place, you know, you'd kind of evolve it over time. But the thing I always liked the most was the end where you do Q&A. And then that gives you an opportunity, by the way, also like a stand-up comedian in some ways, to interact with people because you never know what they're going to say. And, you know, you have a rough idea. You're in a tech thing. But sometimes people will ask off-the-wall questions or whatever. And I like that kind of stuff. And I always felt like I was better at impromptu conversation. Sure. You know, that if we're sitting in a bar in Rattle and Hum in New York and some guy I've never met comes in and says, hey, I like your show, whatever. And we talk. And we just talk about tech stuff. And it's a very natural conversation because we all have the same interests.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, standing up there with a teleprompter or whatever PowerPoint thing, like, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, the panel that I'm on a panel with like brilliant, brilliant engineers. And then there's me, you know, a shithead from Queens.
Yeah, so you can kind of approach it like, you can approach it kind of the right way. You could say, look, I'm not going to be that guy,
yeah,
you know, like they are, but I can be something else. You could interject humor from time to time or just a kind of an everyman perspective. I think, you know, the strength that you have is that you're, as far as technology goes, I mean, because, you know, you're personal and all that stuff, but I mean, you kind of have a general knowledge, you know, that kind of goes beyond the bounds of whatever very specific topic you guys are talking about.
Yeah.
And I think that can be helpful. So,
well, thank you. Thank you.
I think it'll be fine.
Thank you for the pep talk, Paul. I appreciate it. So you're going to be in Vegas tomorrow. Are you going to be in Vegas for your birthday? Because your birthday is Thursday.
That's right.
So you're going to still be there. Big birthday bash in Vegas for Paul.
No.
Not going to Sapphire's and having a big birthday party.
I looked to see if I could come home a day early because the funny thing about this show is that I'm really busy on Wednesday and then we had to move things around and now I'm actually not that busy on Thursday and I was like, oh, maybe I could come home late Thursday and that would be pretty good. But I couldn't. JetBlue wouldn't let me change it. So my dad lives in Vegas, but he's out of town. It's so strange. It's a very weird timing.
It is a weird time. It's a weird time to go to Vegas, especially now with everything that's been going on. You were supposed to be in New York on Monday for, I guess, Monday or today? Which day?
Which day? Tuesday. Yeah, it would have been Monday.
Yeah.
Wait.
Yeah, Monday.
Yes, Monday.
Yeah.
And then also the previous, I think Tuesday, they had a behind the scenes kind of press tour.
Yeah, a lot has happened.
I was just like, guys, I've been coming to Vegas for, I mean, to New York for like 6 weeks straight.
You need a break.
I'm going to Vegas the next day. And I, you know.
Yeah.
Last week, I think, was the only week since I got home from Europe that I didn't go somewhere, I think.
Well, that makes sense. Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. Yeah.
It's funny. I mean, I've been to, you know, Washington, D.C. and Fort Collins. I've been to New York many, you know, several times. You know, it's been a weird couple
of months. Plus, you had a speaking engagement in Boston. So you had something every single week rather than, you know, sticking to your regular schedule. Paul, yeah. I want to ask you this. Last week we did the show, and this was on the notes, and I didn't really get a chance to talk about this. You know, you are not really a cord cutter, but you subscribe to all these different services. Like you have Hulu.
Yeah, I'm a money spender. Is what I am.
You have Netflix and Hulu and all these other services where the concept of cord cutting was to kind of cut back on the cost. But if you really do the math, if you want to get everything that you have, you're going to end up spending about the same thing or close to it, you know, if you really do the math.
It, by the way, doesn't mean it's not still worthwhile, right? I mean, there are other things to consider, but yes.
No, and listen, I do it too. And I still have cable. I haven't cut it due to, you know, I like watching sports live and I like watching a certain couple shows that are not available on any of these services, you know, immediately. So I still subscribe to cable, but this is interesting. You know, my brothers, I have two younger brothers. They do not watch any cable. They watch everything on Netflix and Hulu and YouTube. And now YouTube has a paid $9.99 a month service called YouTube Red where there are no ads.
Right.
And I'm curious if the demo that YouTube caters to, which it's broad, but the reality is a lot of the youth get their content off of YouTube. Will they be subscribing to a service like this for $9.99? Is YouTube captivating content? Does it have enough captivating content for you to pay $9.99 a month not to see the 15-second ad or 30-second ad in the beginning of the video?
It might. You know, two things are on this topic. One is I've been spending a lot of time using the Chromecast lately in a variety of scenarios, I guess. And it's a very interesting device to me. And I'm increasingly... I really wish that Microsoft would support this thing natively, and maybe they can't because of some Google thing or whatever, but it'd be neat if Microsoft apps, at least on iOS and Android, offered, you know, those kind of capabilities. But with the new Chromecast, Google's offering like a kind of a hub where you can see stuff that's on YouTube, and some of it's paid content, some of it is just free content. The free content increasingly comes with ads, you know, as you know. And one of the things, you know, people probably do this. I mean, I just had never really spent a lot of time doing this, but I noticed recently you can, with a mobile YouTube app, you can queue up content, right? And so you could do something like, I want to see like Married with Children, the funniest clips where, you know, Ed Harris makes fun of the woman who lives next door. And then when that's done, after 13 minutes, the next clip is going to be like the funniest moments from Seinfeld. And then when that's done, after 15 minutes, I'm going to queue up, you know, like a concert with Billy Joel or something, you know. And you can let it play, and it kind of, you know, they stream in turn, and it's sort of like watching TV, and it really is sort of like watching TV because there are ads that often come on, and sometimes you can skip them early and sometimes you can't. And so I find that to be very interesting. But then you can kind of get on the dark side
of YouTube
of this, right?
Yeah.
Which is, let me see if I can think of an example. I listened to a podcast called How Did This Get Made? And sometimes these guys will talk about a movie that sounds so outrageous, it's so terrible. I love bad movies. I look it up, and I'll go to like the Roku, and I'll look it up. You know, is this movie available for just free streaming, maybe over Netflix, or can I rent it on Amazon or whatever? And try to find the movie. In some cases, I can't find the movie. And I've noticed in some of those cases, if you go to YouTube, YouTube has like the full movie, like on YouTube, and it's gray. It's like a gray area, right? It's. I don't know why it's still there. I don't know how it hasn't been taken down already. It often is terrible quality. Sometimes it's okay quality. And I've actually watched a couple of full movies that way from YouTube. But that's gray, right? There's also like the absolute dark part of the internet, which is kind of like the Napster for movies type stuff, right? And this service was just taken down, but I was discussing this with one of the
popcorn,
guys I worked
right?
with recently. The popcorn thing, right? I don't know if you've ever used this thing.
I have, yeah.
It's amazing. I mean, it's amazing. And on a PC, it's full blown piracy. It's it is full blown. You possibly should be arrested. You know, like there's no doubt about it, because you can download these movies to your computer. Like it's basically a front. It's a beautiful. What it is, if you don't know, I'm sorry, is a beautiful front end for a torrent site. And what it does is it finds the best quality torrents of big budget movies, you know, recent TV shows. And I think there's an anime thing too. I didn't really look at that, but, and it presents it in kind of a Netflix UI, like UI. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
Really nice.
It's very Netflixy.
They have subtitles in multiple languages. It's really well done. On a mobile device, it's only, I guess it's 1 degree less insidious in that, you can't download it to the device. You just stream it. And I guess the point of the service is while you're streaming it, you're also acting as a host for the file. So it's it's the way torrent works. It's completely illegal. There's no doubt about it. To sort of protect myself, you know, should Verizon come calling and say, hey, we noticed you were doing this behavior. What's going on? I pulled the Pete Townshend defense, which was in my case, meaning I watched a movie that I already own on iTunes.
Yes.
You know, like just to see what it was like.
Well, Pete Townsend's defense was he was doing research.
Well, it was research.
Yeah, it was.
I got to tell you, though, and you know this, I guess, but for people listening who have maybe never heard of this, the quality is astonishing.
Yeah.
And I actually brought my wife in at one point. And I was like, I want you to look at this thing. That's the movie that's playing here. It was the Jurassic World, or Jurassic, whatever it's called, whatever. We watch things that we stream on Netflix on whatever night of the week, and Netflix will pause and stutter, or it looks like a YouTube video. The quality is so low. And here's this thing coming through in pristine, perfect
condition,
1080p Blu-ray rip, whatever it was. And here's my problem. I'm paying for bandwidth that can deliver that kind of quality, but I don't actually get it when I use legitimate services.
Isn't that interesting?
And that really bothers me. And this speaks to that thing you and I have kind of brought up a bunch of times where I sort of said, you know, whether it's a wireless carrier like AT&T Wireless or Verizon, or a home internet provider like Fios, which is what I have, or Comcast, Xfinity, whatever. These companies are desperate not to be dumb pipes. But if you watch an on-demand movie on Fios, you're getting is kind of a crappy, it's okay, it's fine. But I can watch the same movie over like a completely illegal.
It's a thousand times better quality.
Oh, it is. It's a million times better.
Yeah. And that's baffling. I mean, that is frustrating. It's baffling that I just had the same exact experience. I was watching.
Yeah.
What was I trying? Oh, Scandal, right? I was watching Scandal on demand on Fios, which should be the best overall quality, right? Yeah. I mean, it should be. It's coming through Fios. They're allocating bandwidth differently. They're not using your internet bandwidth. They're using whatever they allocate for Fios.
Delivering you a really glitchy looking, terrible local call.
It was so compressed.
Yeah. Compressed.
It was so compressed where I stopped it. Guess what I did? I went to ABC's website Apple TV. I went through the ABC app and guess what? I watched it there. It was great, pristine. And this is going over the internet rather than going through my cable provider.
Yep.
That's the part that's crazy. Yeah. And, you know, it kind of goes hand in hand with you. You're going to try to go for whatever best quality you're able to receive. And you know what? For some people, it's not necessarily Fios. It's not necessarily Netflix or Hulu. It's
some combination of things.
Yeah.
I mean, the problem, though, is Fios has the bandwidth to do this right, and they're not doing it right. And they're doing it on purpose. You know, there's no doubt about it.
Because
God forbid I get the quality that I'm paying for. So what I was going to do was the reason I was looking at this was to write up something about, which is like what we're talking about now. And of course I just started looking at it, and of course now it's gone. So the popcorn.io, whatever it went offline, and I guess they're working on some kind of illegal thing called Butter or whatever. I was just looking at the stuff last night, but I can't write this now because I don't have any shots of what I was doing. I just took a couple of photos, but it was interesting to me that YouTube announced this Red service right as this was happening. To me, it was just kind of a coincidental thing, because the truth is, if I could pay a reasonable price, now of course this is not going to offer it's not going to offer the popcorn time thing, right? It's not the full experience, but I guess the value proposition is a lot like Netflix, which by the way, if you haven't looked at recently, just had an explosion of updated, new movies, that some of which are actually really decent. But if there's some combination of content on there that makes sense, yeah. I mean, I do think this is the future. I mean, I would rather pay, and again, I'm sort of making this up, I guess, but, you know, if you could, like, for example, if I'm trying to think of a good example, like I watch Homeland, which is on Showtime, and we watch The Affair, which is actually, I think, on Showtime too. So instead of paying for Showtime as part of cable, if you could, like, just pay YouTube and get access to, like, if there was a Showtime channel or something or whatever, obviously you could pay Showtime directly. Maybe that's not a great example, but, you know, no TV shows there. You have to have cable to watch them that night, but you can watch them the next day legally in a central location. Like, yeah. Not, I don't want to, like, what network is that stupid show on? Like, I don't want to go to AMC's website, or no, maybe it was this other channel or whatever. Like, just go to some place, you know, and get decent quality that's just bandwidth, and you would probably get really high quality. I mean, I think it might be worth it.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, for me, and this kind of goes hand in hand, because the new Apple TV's shipping on Friday. So mm-hmm. You should receive it on Friday. If you ordered, you could receive it as of yesterday. I don't know if there's any delays or yep. anything with
yeah,
the shipping.
Yeah, I ordered it. Yep.
But yesterday, it was available for order, and you're going to get it on Friday. I know a lot of people that ordered this thing, and I'm surprised at how many people I know ordered this thing. Because, number one, it's not that cheap. It's $149 starting for a 32 gig, $199 for a 64 gig. Right. Most people that are ordering it already have an Apple TV. So I don't know why they would be ordering it. They're not the most technical people, but they are getting it because it's new and this is what you do, right? Yeah. A new thing comes out. You don't know why you want it. You're going to get it. I'm really, really curious to see what the app situation is going to be on this and how it's going to play out, because that's a big part of the story with Apple TV. I want to talk about YouTube Red also, but since we're on the topic with the set-top boxes.
This falls into the same conversation, right?
So now with Apple TV, you get this new Apple TV. You're going to pay, you know, CBS has their all access. Let's say you want CBS programming, $9.99 a month. You still need some sort of cable service. The best thing to do is get the lowest possible cable package. Have one set-top box, and then have, you know, one of these devices in whatever room you want to put. Now you could get CBS, NBC, ABC, all these channels, plus whatever else you're paying for. I'm curious to see how this is going to play out for the apps on Apple TV. We spoke about it last week, but the major part of this for me is going to be games and third-party developers. Right. How much are they opening the store up? And we still don't have an answer. Nobody really knows who's going to be available. What applications are going to be available? We really don't know this. Are we going to see, you know, of the internet and the GFQs of the internet available on Apple TV from, you know, or are they going to slowly start letting people in?
Yeah, I don't, you know, we're going to see. I mean, I have slightly bigger concerns around, like, the big, like I said, Microsoft, you know, for example. It would be so great to be able to spend $150 on a tiny silent device that has awesome performance and gives me kind of the first class performance and experience of the Microsoft services that I'm already paying for.
You know what I want, Paul? Here's a great thing.
Love
okay.
To get that.
Here's an idea. And this is something I've been screaming about for a long time. I'm not a big gamer, but I play some games.
Okay.
Xbox has a humongous library on their Xbox Arcade. Right, I don't know if they still do. They still call it Xbox Arcade, the downloadable games,
like the Xbox Live Arcade. I don't think so anymore. But
okay, so but you could still download those kind of games. You could still buy them, whatever they call them, like Castle Crashers, for example. One of my favorite games on the Xbox.
Okay.
If I want to download those things, why can't there be a little set top box, a Surface set top box, where I could get, you know, limited games?
So, by the way, there's nothing wrong with that. It would be great, and it would be fine for that to be around. But the thing is, what would be better is one device that has access to everything. And the Apple device, and by the way, it's Apple's fault, right, that this is true, but the Apple device has the one potential benefit in that they are the one that could have everything. Because, of course, they're the only ones that are ever going to have iTunes.
And they're the only ones that have
and do have YouTube.
But they're also the ones that have a gigantic app store.
Well, that's fine too. But what I mean though is, like, you can get Netflix almost anywhere. You can get Amazon almost anywhere, Hulu almost anywhere. Google Play is very limited. Apple stuff is very limited. It's only available on Apple's hardware. And so, if they actually opened the store up. If they actually made, imagine, you know, Google Play Music, Google Play Videos, or whatever it's called, Microsoft Groove, Microsoft Movies and TV. If that was the one place where you could get everything, I mean, ultimately, that's what I'm looking for. I've got 8 boxes in my living room right now. I just want one box, you know, and that could be the one. They have the chance.
I mean,
it's their own restriction, but they definitely have the chance.
But that's a story for everybody, right? I mean, especially, you know, like our viewers, for example, we have 200 people in the chat right now. We have Chromecast and we have Apple TVs and we have Rokus and we have Amazon Fires. You know, and I know people that separate it and put it in every single room. Like one room has an Amazon Fire and the other one has an Apple TV. Why? Yeah. Why are we doing that?
Right.
Because not everybody has the same thing.
Not everyone has, you know, the money to buy multiple devices for multiple rooms, you know.
I Apple is the closest, in my opinion, to getting everything.
Right. Me too.
And now with the other App Store, we'll see what happens with that. I'm very excited for it, actually. I did not order it yet. I was going to order it today, but yeah, I haven't ordered it yet.
I did.
I may just go to the store
on Friday, so I won't really see it till Saturday. But
I may just go to the store to get it because they'll be available in the stores. But I really don't have anywhere to put it. I really like my Amazon Fire TV, and I have it in the bedroom because I have – now, this is getting very very specific for my reasoning. I have the New Japan Pro Wrestling app on that thing.
Yikes.
That I sideloaded on the Amazon Fire TV, and that's the only way that I could watch New Japan Pro Wrestling on my TV.
I'm literally speechless.
Yeah.
I don't know what to say to that.
It's the same reason why I do MS Configs, Paul, and defragging.
Right.
Same exact reason. I mean,
that's deep-seated personal issues.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know. I'm excited for the Apple TV. I'm curious to see what the reviews are when people get it. You know,
it's odd to me that there hasn't been a lot of information out about it. Right?
I mean, is that good or bad? I don't know.
I just don't think it was ready. I don't think people have them. Or maybe they do now, but they didn't, you know, early on.
If I were to take a guess right now, the story is going to be really powerful, but lacking apps. Not ready for prime time. You know, that's going to be like the Verge headline.
So I guess when I think of it, I think of it more along the lines of, okay, we have an Apple TV today. We know what that's like. The performance can only be better. So that's going to be a big thing. The app story, you know, at launch doesn't have to be much better. The remote seems better and has some touch capabilities and some, I think, some voice capabilities. The UI is going to be new and different, hopefully better. To me, that's kind of the first stuff initially, and then we'll kind of take it from there. Games, I don't personally care about, but you know, there'll be some of that stuff.
I guess I'm the only one that really cares about the games. Almost everybody that I speak to goes, "No, I don't care about the games. I don't care about the games." But for me, I kind of do feel that it's important, and rather than spending $400 on a console or $300 on a console, you're spending $149 and your kid is going to be happy. Or maybe they're not. Who knows? What do I know? Right. I don't have a kid yet. A couple months.
Yep.
I'll know in a couple of years, Paul, when they say, "No, this isn't the toy I wanted." You got the knockoff. But I want to talk about YouTube Red. Would you... Do you probably use YouTube as much as I do. Almost everybody here is using YouTube. Is $9.99 a month for ad-free worth it for you? Is this something that you would pay for?
Because
I can't justify it on short... I don't watch 40-minute videos on YouTube. That's not happening. I'm not watching TV shows on YouTube. Maybe eventually that's what they're going to go towards, but this isn't how I use the service. I use the service to watch clips. I watched a Perfect Strangers TV theme the other day. Do I want to pay $9.99 a month to watch a 30-second clip?
No, but that's not – see, but they want it – see, they're trying to expand beyond that, right? I mean, today YouTube is a series of these small clips. You know, my daughter could spend all day on YouTube watching like cat, you know, funny cat videos and whatever. Like I said, I this has not become the way that I do things, but it's increasingly possible to watch – longer, you know, videos on YouTube and to watch them as kind of a series of videos in a queue. And actually that works fine. So, we'll see.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know who's going to pay for this. Now, the other problem that I have with, the other problem that I really have with, YouTube and the way that they do it is you know, initially when they launched, they had a very good front page where they kind of profiled the top videos on what people are watching. And if you log into your account on Google or YouTube, it doesn't really have that anymore. Their homepage is recommended videos for you, so it's only showing you things that it thinks you might want to see. And then it's showing you what you're subscribing to, and then recently uploaded by recommended videos for you. So it's guessing what you would be interested in. So you're never leaving what YouTube thinks you're interested in. Before, it wasn't like that. It would show you, you know, the top videos, and it would show you the top subscribe pages and YouTube artists. So this discoverability was a major part of YouTube, and that's how a lot of these YouTube celebrities became big.
That doesn't exist anymore
on the front page. I and that's a big problem for me. I think discoverability of original content is what's going to drive people to pay $9.99 a month. I don't want to pay $9.99 a month to watch.
I almost picture you have like a feed on, and it's based on the stuff you've watched, the stuff you've liked or whatever, and it kind of just goes. And
but see, I don't like that. I don't like the feed to determine what.
But you're not. I mean, okay, but I think that if you were going to pay for this, and I'm not saying I don't know how long this. I'm looking at what I have in YouTube. I mean, the New York Times, for example, has an auto writer. His series is called Driven, and he makes really high quality videos for the car reviews that he does.
Yeah.
And looking at YouTube, there are over 60 of them right now. They go back a couple of years, I guess. You could click play all and just play these things back to back. They're all like 4 or 5 minutes long. You know, they're excellent. This guy's great. There's something on the New York Times too. I'm not sure why I have two New York Times things, but there's a series called 36 Hours, which is the travel thing. They made a TV show out of this. It's terrible. It has nothing to do with this series, but there's a video series that accompanies the articles. The articles are written by local people. So if you're talking about Boston or Paris or Buenos Aires or whatever, it's people who really know what they're talking about. And they make really high quality 6-minute-ish videos of each place. And those are awesome.
And you're looking at your feed right now.
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm looking at mine, and I think there needs to be a combination of what other people are watching right now, what they recommend to you, and what you're subscribed to. There has to be a combination of that on their front page, rather than it just being like right now. I'm just looking. It's just things that YouTube thinks, you know, recommended.
Let's do this. Another page. Let's embarrass and humiliate each other.
Okay.
This is how we'll do it.
Okay.
I'm going to describe to you the videos that I see in my recommended section on the YouTube.
Okay, and I'm going to tell you mine.
Right. Now, some of these are things that you would expect. They're videos about Microsoft. You know, there's a Verge video about, you know, Satya Nadella's vision for Microsoft. Yeah. Apple fanboy in crisis over Microsoft Surface Book, kind of a classic.
Okay.
There's this is so weird. There are two Star Wars videos, things you didn't know, deleted scenes, whatever, because I was watching the Star Wars trailer, most likely, really stupid. Biggest mistakes in popular TV shows, right? I don't know why exactly. There's some comedian stuff. I watch a lot of comedians on YouTube.
I do too, follow, yeah.
Et cetera. there's a conspiracy theory thing about the Shuttle Challenger disaster, which is crazy.
There's a conspiracy theory about that? Oh, now now I'm interested. I want you know what I want? I want a list of recommended things that Paul Theroux has watched.
Some of it's okay. There's live music. I'm not sure what that's. Oh, I've watched concert. That's why. So we went to a concert last week, and I noticed from going to a concert in August, you can look up the band live 2015. You can find footage possibly from the night that you saw them. So if you really like the show, you might be able to find like a 4K video. And I looked it up and I didn't, but now there's a thing about that. So it's that kind of stuff. Right. Actually, there's nothing totally humiliating here.
Okay, so I'm gonna show mine.
Okay.
Let's see. Let me go to it. Howard Stern show Ralph pisses off Gary.
Yep.
The rise of James Storm, WWE.com exclusive. The death and return of Superman pitch by Max Landis. Let me see what else. Google Chromecast 2015 initial review by Michael Manna. Casey Armstrong calls the Howard Stern show. So it's all wrestling and Howard Stern. That's all I'm seeing here. And then based on my searches, it's showing recommended movies, The Dark Knight, Oblivion, and Man of Steel. Then I have Rick and Morty, The Simpsons, Cartoon Network Adult Swim, Robot Chicken. And then, here's a topper. Miley Cyrus' boobs made Paul McCartney uncomfortable.
What?
Yeah. Because I was watching Jimmy Fallon. It's a Jimmy Fallon clip. So, but I don't, like, I get it, but there's nothing that, I'm looking through his front page. I'm like, there's nothing that I see here. I'm like, oh man, I want to watch that. That's pretty cool. These are things that it thinks that I'm interested in. Oh, inside Jay Cutler's house, the bodybuilder. That's one.
I think part of the problem is that it's not very smart, right? I mean, no. So for example, because I watched a live music video of some kind, I must just like live music. So here's one that's live music. And this is not actually necessarily something. Actually, it's funny how this changes. I just reloaded the page, and now I see Sanford and Son, Funniest Exchange from Aunt Esther. Al tries Peggy's cooking. Oh,
mine changed also, yeah.
Oh, Computer Chronicles, of course.
Yeah.
Which is awesome. I don't know. I mean, I subscribe to a bunch of channels. I'm not even sure what it means to subscribe to channels, but
well, what happens when you subscribe to the channel? It shows you their latest videos, and on top of that, it builds the database of what you're interested in based on that.
Okay,
I want an
Mine's
option
a lot of
where
work stuff. It's
Let me see. If I log out, sign out, what does it show? See, when I sign out, that's the page I want. These are things that other people are watching.
There's got to be a way to see that page.
Sam, it's still.
What are people watching? Ugh, God,
oh, this the Drake is Hotline Bling music video. Back to the Future 4 trailer 2016 parody.
10 countries with the most beautiful people.
I don't have that.
Craziest things found by airport security. It's all such stupid stuff.
But again, that's what YouTube is.
They recommend the WWE channel. Randy Orton joins forces with Dean Ambrose and Roman.
See, he knows that we're on the phone right now. We're talking. It heard our entire conversation. It's fascinating how it does the aggregation and the discoverability of content. But if I'm paying $9.99 a month, I want to discover original content. And I don't think they have enough original content to drive people to pay $9.99 a month for. To watch a 30-second video or a 2-minute video, I can't justify spending that kind of money.
The problem is we can't even preview it. So we don't actually know
what it is.
Yeah, yeah, you know, we don't even know what it is, right? So when is this actually debuting? It's pretty soon, isn't it?
It's very soon, yeah, a couple of weeks. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's a couple of weeks now. I feel like this is another Google thing where before they come up with the platform, they're just putting it out there and to see if there's any interest. I don't know, and I don't know anybody that would be willing to pay this.
Okay, so there is, if I recall this correctly, there is an additional perk, which we should perhaps mention, which is that if you subscribe to Red, you also get Google Play Music All Access, whatever it's called, the subscription service.
Yeah.
And vice versa, right? The theory there being that if you're really into music and are paying for this subscription service, you might want to get unfettered access to music videos, right? That's okay.
October 28th. So it's coming out tomorrow.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's
October 28th. Okay. Yeah. So I didn't realize it was that soon. But now also the other issue is a lot of YouTube creators are really upset over this.
Okay. Because
it's going to take out the ads and they make their money off of ad revenue.
Right.
So
it's very well, by the way, that might explain why they're doing this. There's way too many people making lots of money on YouTube.
Absolutely. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. It's interesting.
I bet that's actually the real reason they're doing this.
That most probably is the real reason why they're doing
this. No, I mean, seriously, like stupid amounts of money for doing next to nothing.
I have one video on YouTube we made $3,000 off of, and it was a unboxing of the LifeCam Cinema.
That's incredible.
Yep. Yep. That was in 2009.
I don't think I've ever made money on YouTube.
I don't turn the ads on. Because
arguably, I'm on YouTube more than most people.
Yeah, you are.
But
you are.
I don't think I've ever made money on it.
Yeah. So I want to move on to something else here, and I can't believe we're still talking about this in 2015. And when we started doing the show, mm-hmm. we were counting down the days on when BlackBerry's going to fail. Do you remember that, when they're going to finally call it quits?
Yep.
Do you know what you had predicted?
No.
You had predicted 2013.
Yeah, but, you know, so they're limping along. If you were to look at BlackBerry as an entity and compare it to BlackBerry from like 4 or 5 years ago, it is a much tinier company. And so the only way they've been able to continue is by jettisoning everything. They don't sell any phones. I mean, Microsoft only sold 5 million handsets in the most recent quarter. They dramatically outsold BlackBerry, you know. So they're still around, but they've ceased to be anything of import, I mean, a long time ago. So
yeah, well, they have a new phone. I don't know if you know this.
Yeah, I did.
The BlackBerry Priv.
Sure.
$699.
Mm-hmm.
And it's running Android. 3 years too late, in my opinion.
Oh, yeah.
You know, BlackBerry, the QNX system is a very good operating system, but it just, that operating system should have replaced BlackBerry 7 years and years ago.
That's not the reason, right? I mean, you're right. It's probably great. It's just timing. It's marketing. It's all kinds of things. I mean, they just didn't, you know, for the same reason with Microsoft. They just never.
But who's buying BlackBerries right now? Like who?
There's probably a handful of governments that still believe these things are better for some, you know, reason related to security. And that's it.
I'm looking at the lineup right now. Look at this. They got the Priv, the Passport, which is that weird square thing that sold really well, according to BlackBerry. The BlackBerry Classic, which is like the old bold and whatever. You know, it's the one with the keyboard. The BlackBerry Leap, I've never heard of. And the BlackBerry Z30.
This Priv thing, this this will be the death knell for Windows Phone. I mean, someday Microsoft's going to do the same thing, and they'll be like, look, it's the BlackBerry experience or the Windows Phone experience that everyone loves, but it runs Android apps. And it's like, unfortunately, that's kind of the moment where things just, you know, that's how it ends.
I don't know what the end story for this company is going to be. You know, they're trying something new here. I guess, is this it?
What the end story of this company is? It's they'll probably get sold for one thing, but it's going to be services. It's
enterprise,
not hardware. It's not the hardware.
Well, they have a lot of enterprise
solutions. Actually,
if
I'm not mistaken, by the way, I believe someone else makes this phone for them, and perhaps all of their phones.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think they're getting out of the manufacturing part of it, because that's the really expensive part of the business. You know.
So who's making this for them? Let's see.
Like,
I have no idea.
Let's see if I can find this story here.
Yeah, I'm curious on who makes this for them. But obviously, they're going to get sold. But I don't know. It's amazing how they were the number one smartphone on the market, you know, for a long, long time, and they just they just couldn't adapt. They just didn't do anything.
Well, remember, this is what happens when you're the entrenched leader or whatever. You had something that really worked. This is what Microsoft happened with Windows. I mean, it's hard to move off of that. You always think, well, okay, if we just change this one thing, and you know, people will come around, and the world's passing you by, and you don't see it. It doesn't mean you're an idiot. It doesn't mean that, you know, you're like this huge failure. I mean, this is just what happens. Someone who is smaller and quicker and doesn't have the legacy requirements that you have and all that could come along and kind of eat your lunch, you know. So
I'm looking at their app store right now. This is the greatest. I'm looking at their app store. It is so bad. It's so bad. It's amazing to me, I can't believe they're putting out another phone in 2015, and they're selling it for $699, thinking people are actually going to go and purchase this thing. I don't know anybody that would be willing to spend that kind of money or willing to go to a BlackBerry device at this point. I do know some people that still have two phones, and one is a BlackBerry and one is their regular phone, and it's their jobs. You know, it's whatever IT admin is in charge thinks that these are still the good phones to have for work. When in reality, you don't really necessarily need this device.
Nobody wants them.
Nobody wants them. Nobody wants it.
If you get something like this at work, it's like a punishment. You know?
Yeah. Oh, you're not giving me an iPhone?
Nobody wants this stuff.
Yeah.
I don't, and by the way, I don't mean literally. I'm going to hear from the one guy. Like, you know, I know there are some enthusiasts of this stuff. I get it. I what I mean is, just generally speaking, you know, the world has spoken. They want Android devices. They want iPhones. You know, and this is an Android device, but
I don't know. Who knows? Well, maybe I wonder what version of Android it's running. That's what I would love to know.
That's probably 4.2.
Is it running the latest version?
It's got to be something.
Well, did you get Halo?
I did.
How do you like it?
I like it a lot, and I'm trying to work through this one. It's hard, you know. Of course, I'm traveling this week, so it's going to be, you know, some days before I can pick it up again. But I played some single player. I played some multiplayer. It is gorgeous. there's some stuff about, you know, obviously there are people who love Halo and they look forward to every Halo. I used to be one of those guys. Up until Halo 4, I played through every version of Halo single player multiple times. And Halo 2 and 3, I played multiplayer very regularly. Those were big games for me. You know, Halo 4 was kind of a non-event. Halo, to me, it's tired. It's like the same enemies, the same style of graphics, And in this game, it seems like they've kind of turned it up a notch. And so everything is very precise. The control, the weapon feel, the weapon sounds, you know, it's really, really good. The controls are great, very easy to get into. So we'll see. I want to like it. I mean, with Call of Duty kind of going off in their Titanfall / Destiny, whatever, sidetrack, I'm not as interested. And, you know, I need other games too. Maybe it ends up being other games, not another game, but...
I mean, the thing that I've heard overall from people is that the fact that it's 60 frames per second consistently,
it
looks unbelievable. Yeah. Like, that's the biggest difference in overall quality, is the fact that it's so smooth to play.
There's a, you know, even in Call of Duty, which, you know, I'm very familiar. I play Call of Duty every single day. Some Call of Duty, whatever game. I move it around a little bit these days. But, you know, there are moments... in various games where, you know, like you have various attacks, you obviously have guns you can fire, but there's like a knife movement you can do to kind of stab someone in the back or something. And some of the games it works and some of the games it doesn't. It's a little off or the timing's different and all that kind of stuff. And it's frustrating moving from game to game. I mean, going to Halo 5, I have to say it's like they got everything right. It is, it's so crisp. Just the quality of just the way the controls work, it's really, really well done.
Is it that big of a difference compared to Halo 4 in overall quality?
Huge difference. That said, I mean, I didn't spend a lot of time in Halo 4 because I really didn't like it. To me, you boot up Halo 4 and you're like, oh, it's like Halo again. Like, seriously, like this one, there's all new graphics, there's all new creatures, and the way they die, even there's like some, you know, you there's a creature where you when you finally kill him, he kind of explodes, and then it pauses in midair before it kind of, you know, continues out. It's really well done. It's just beautiful. I think there's a thing with Halo, you know, like any long running series, where it gets a little tired, and I think they really work to, you know, ratchet it up a notch. I don't want to get too over the top here. I mean, I'm not gonna be able to play it for the next 3 days, but it's beautiful and it's really well done.
Yeah,
really well,
I mean,
done.
Almost every review that I've read of the game over the last, you know, day, they're all saying that it really comes down to how like crisp, the
crisp
game
is. Crisp
is
a great word, yeah.
It's so crisp, and and fluid was another word that people were using. Like,
it's immediately familiar, is the controls, instantly, like just perfect. And they work perfectly. Like, it's perfect. The gun variety is very interesting to me. That was another issue I've always had with Halo. You know, Halo multiplayer is Halo multiplayer, but it looks great. I'm going to play around the game styles. I think there's a nice thing, and they had this a little bit before, but a nice chance to do co-op in this, which I think is going to be a big deal.
Yeah, I'm looking at a video right now. This looks so good.
It's great. It really is. The music is awesome. It's you know, again, I've only played it for a couple hours, but... looks good. It looks really good.
Yeah, they did a good job with this one.
Yeah, I mean, I think so.
Yeah, I'm looking at this video. Wow, it looks so good.
Yeah.
Wow,
they
actually...
need to put this on Windows. I don't know why they haven't done that.
Yeah, and imagine what it's going to look like on a computer. It's going to look even better.
I know.
Yeah, it's going to be great. Yep. Apple Music has 15 million users, but half of them are on free trial.
Is it that many?
Yeah, 15.
15, okay.
Yep. 15 million users, but half our trial.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that's a good number or a bad number, but you know what is a bad number, Paul, before we wrap it up? The Steve Jobs movie was a total flop. $7.3 million.
A couple things about this one. I've watched with a kind of fascination the reactions to this movie. I have heard way too many times that this is not factual. It's not the real story, you know, blah, 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 whatever. There is a serious effort to kind of canonize this guy as some kind of a saint. And anyone who doesn't tell the story of the prescribed awful way is on the out list, you know. I think I'm glad that this thing failed, but not for the reason that most people are. It's probably really well made. I know it's well written. Ellen Sorkin's amazing. It's a story about a guy who made three computers, two of which failed.
Yeah.
And I, to me, that's not a dramatic story of any kind that any normal human being would ever want to watch. And so this is not an interesting story. I mean,
at what point, what does it go up to?
It tells three stories.
Yeah.
The story of the original Mac, which was a failure. In fact, the Mac didn't take off until after he left the company. The next computer, which was probably the worst failure in the history of the personal computing industry. And then the introduction of the original iMac, which of course started Apple back on their comeback, in a very modest way, by the way. But whatever, I mean, fair enough. To me, Steve Jobs is not the god that these people think he is, and he's not interesting, I think, to normal people. When normal people find out what he's really about, he becomes a lot less interesting because he's just a jerk.
I don't think normal people know anything. Like, they don't care.
I know, but they're taught. See, the problem is people believe the bullshit.
Yeah.
You know, this guy's some kind of a, you know, all he is the genius who brought us these expensive devices that we covet so much, you know. There's a lot more to him than that, and all of it's negative. And I just don't think he's someone we should hold up for veneration.
The Ashton Kutcher movie, I didn't see that one either, but what was the premise of that one?
It was the same Steve Jobs life story, bullshit, like TV movie style.
And it's amazing how people were bashing that one. They were saying, oh my God, that one was horrible. But this movie only did $500,000 more than the Ashton Kutcher version of the Steve Jobs movie. That was a total travesty.
I don't know.
Do people care? Really well made. I don't think people care. Like, people just want to use their phone. I don't think people care to know anything about him.
By the way, Bill Gates, you know, transformed an industry. On and on and on. You know, Bill Gates' life story, not very interesting. Sorry.
Nobody would care about that either. Yeah.
You don't have to fictionalize it. You don't have to do anything. It's just not interesting. Sorry.
Yeah.
Why would it be? He's just a nerd.
Who's he dating? Joan Baez? Or was it Joni Mitchell?
Steve Jobs did date Joan Baez.
Yeah. Joan Baez, yeah. It was in the book. I thought they would, like, that would be the interesting thing. They talk about how much he smelled in the movie.
I didn't see the movie. Okay. I don't care.
I don't think anybody cares, but here's the thing. Nobody really cares. And people are devastated. Oh my God, they're shocked.
The people who are in the Apple religion who want this thing to fail because it's not the story they want to tell are happy for the wrong reason. You know, this thing didn't fail because of that reason.
But what story?
Steve Jobs is inherently not interesting to the general public, not the real Steve Jobs.
But what's the story that they want them to tell? Do they want them to tell the real story?
Official Apple sanctioned story that he, despite everything that was in his official biography,
the Church of Steve Jobs,
every single book that's ever been written by him, he wasn't just the jerk that you've all heard about. He also loved people. And he did nice things for people.
So how do they justify the book? Because the book was very clear about what an ass this guy was.
Yeah.
I mean, the mobile me story alone is phenomenal.
Story I actually have no problem with. I mean, I think that was the right response to that one.
But you know what I mean? Like, that's a great example of him just being an ass, but...
I guess, you know, if Steve Jobs had spent one quarter of the effort he did bringing, you know, products to market, doing things like spending time with his family, giving to charity.
He was totally against
charity. He would have been a much more likable individual. But, you know, he was a terrible person. I mean, and, you know, whatever. I mean, I have the genius theory, right? And Steve Jobs falls into this. You can't be as good as that at one thing and be any good at anything else, you know? Larry Bird falls into this category, you know, whatever. I mean, anyone you can think of was just awesome at this one thing. Yeah, they're not very good people in other aspects of life. That's just the truth. And I don't say that to denigrate the man. He's a genius marketer, but at the end of the day, he's someone who was selling us stuff we really didn't need. And, you know, yes, in many cases, he had a nice way of distilling stuff down to its simplest form and saying no to a lot of stuff, all the famous stuff everyone likes to say about Steve Jobs, but he's still selling you really expensive stuff. You know, Apple is a company right now that could do things like pull out of China, make everything in the United States and make a little bit less money, and they would still be one of the biggest companies in the world. Yeah. They don't do it.
Well, when you make really expensive stuff and people buy it, it gives you the ability to make better products, right?
Sure.
When you have a 20% premium, I'm just throwing a number. I don't know if it's 20%, but let's say it's 20% or 30%. When you have a 20 or 30% premium on top of your competitors, guess
Apple's
what?
Margins in the 40% range.
Okay. It's 40%.
They could do all kinds of things. Yeah. But of course, Apple today is not Steve Jobs. I shouldn't commingle those two things. The point is, Steve Jobs had a lot of issues.
You know what's interesting? When you look back at the history of Apple, Tim Cook was running this company for many, many, many years.
Well, by the way, the Apple today is Tim Cook's Apple.
It's not
Apple. Because he's running it now, necessarily. It's because arguably the single biggest thing that improved Apple's financial fortunes over the past decade was his decision when he came in to move all of their manufacturing to China.
Yeah.
That's how they saved a lot of money. And that's how Tim Cook rose to the ranks. China was Tim Cook's deal.
Yeah, he knew how to do manufacturing accounting. Yeah,
that's what he brought to Apple. Because remember, Steve Jobs was always he was the visionary. He envisioned a factory on the ocean, and it would pull in sand, silicon from the ocean, and it would pump out computers on the other side. This was his fairy tale of how things would work. And that's not how it works. It works by paying Chinese people nothing, putting up nets so that the ones who are committing suicide don't hit the ground, and just hoping people in the countries that buy those products don't care about those people.
Yeah, exactly.
So great, you know. And by the way, everyone does it. I know. But Apple sells more products than everyone else.
But here's the interesting thing, okay? So people have this imaginary story that Steve Jobs was running this thing until the day he died, and here comes Tim Cook, and now it's Tim Cook's Apple, but this everything prior to that was Steve Jobs. Tim Cook has been running this company for many, many years.
Yeah. Well,
that he got sick. When was it? When was the diagnosis initially?
There's no way we're going to remember these dates.
Tim Cook was running the company from that point.
When he was out on leave, yes, absolutely. I read these books, you know, like the books about Steve Jobs. I read not because I care about the interpersonal relations, but because I care about
the history,
the making of these products. I'm very interested in the history of it. But there are very interesting stories that, by the way, maybe would make more sense for a movie of some kind where, you know, one of the times Steve Jobs was out on temporary leave, the company surged in his absence. And he was really bothered by this. He saw I think it was a report on TV or read it in the newspaper where someone had suggested that they were better off without Steve Jobs, that maybe Steve Jobs should just stay away. And he actually came back because he was so mad about that.
He's so angry, yeah.
Very jealous of Tim Cook, you know, and Tim Cook and Steve Jobs are completely different people.
I would love to read his book.
Tim Cook?
Yeah.
Oh, one day we will. One day we will. But, you know, what I'm going to be interested in, because he seems, I should say, is a much better person, like a human being than Steve Jobs. But, you know, you got to throw out that thing on the side, which is he still did the China thing.
Yeah.
And has managed to do nothing to fix the problems in China, while talking about it a lot as if he were fixing the problems in China.
But to play the other side, I think a lot of companies are turning a blind eye to the issues happening in manufacturing and in these factories in China. I think it's just the nature of how companies are dealing with it. Just let's just ignore it and maybe it'll go away eventually, but that's not really how things go away. I think Apple is one of the ones that, you know, you're right. I'm curious to see how that changes for them. I mean, didn't they try to bring something? What did they do? The Mac? They brought the Mac here, and then they brought it back. They took it away. They shut down the factory.
I don't know that they took it away, but there's one Mac model. It's that...
the Mac Pro.
The Pro, the little toilet thing.
They were manufacturing in Texas, and I think they closed that factory.
Okay, I don't care. But that was always just a PR gesture, you know? Here's the 1,000 products Apple makes. Let's pick the one that sells the fewest copies. Oh, yeah. The Mac.
And we'll
we'll make this one here in the United States.
And it's the most expensive version of the most expensive product that they sell.
We may find out one day that the point behind that experiment was to discover whether manufacturing in the United States could make sense, and that maybe they would move forward with more things, you know, in the future. And that's maybe possible. They found out it didn't make sense. You know, I don't know.
All right, Paul. Let's wrap it up. Guys, if you're watching live, stay tuned. We're going to hang out for a little bit more. We're going to do What the Talk. It's our bonus show. You can watch it live here, or if you're listening to the podcast, you can go to patreon.com/whatthetech and listen to it there. Paul, anything coming up? I know you're writing a book.
Anything coming up? Like
what's going on?
Like
any plugs? I'm still working on the book.
We had actually, I was hoping last weekend to have gotten this thing out. We had some issues with one of the posters, and because we get posters, I should say, I haven't even really announced that yet, but we're going to put some posters in the book. So hopefully soon on that. In the middle of November, I'm going to. Where am I going, Andrew? I'm going to the UK.
Oh, yes, you are. You're going to the UK for an event.
For an event whose name is now escaping me. I'm terrible.
And you're going to do a beer crawl, from what I know.
Yes, that's going to be in London afterwards. But we're going to have a meetup in London on, I don't have any of this stuff in my calendar yet, on Friday, I want to say November 20th. Mary Jo and I.
Paul's chartering me in.
on a
private plane.
We're going to do a live Windows Weekly from Manchester.
Awesome.
Mary Jo and I again.
Awesome.
And yeah, we'll see how that goes. So that's a couple weeks away, still 3 weeks. Yeah.
I
got to go to Vegas tonight.
And tonight you're taking a red eye to Vegas.
Jeez. Not a red eye, but a night flight.
And I will be watching the Mets today.
Yeah, that's the thing. So actually, I will be able to watch that game on the plane, and I will. And I wanted to say, I don't know if we talked about this yet. I thought that the Mets-Cubs was going to be the best series of the whole playoffs.
Yeah, me too. I did too.
And it was just a wiping of the floor. So I guess kudos to you guys. Obviously, in both cases, neither one of these teams has won in a long, long time. And Kansas City was in the World Series last year, if I remember correctly. I think they lost to the Giants.
Kansas City is a phenomenal team, but the Mets have a great pitching staff.
They were awesome last year. I saw more of Kansas City last year than I did this year. They were awesome last year in the playoffs. So we'll see. I hope this is a good series. I'm okay with either team winning. I'm not saying that to disparage the Mets. It's a big thing for me as a Boston native to say
screw you.
I would like
New York
to see the Mets win. I would be okay with that. I would be happy to see that.
Oh, because you hate the Yankees. Yeah,
I do hate the Yankees. Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
All right, well, let's talk about this on the post show. Guys, subscribe to the podcast wherever our podcasts are available. You can follow me on Twitter at Andrew Zarin. You can follow Paul at TheRot, TheRot.com. Everything you need to know about Paul and everything that he's doing there. Phenomenal, phenomenal website. A lot of information, a lot of news. I like your opinion pieces the best, Paul. I like it when you're just like, hey, listen, this is the deal. This is what's happening.
Yeah, sure.
All right, guys, that's it for this week. See you all later.